Welcome back.
This is Amano Amano.
Shit is getting real.
Now we just have to see how it ends.
Coming on your back is one thing, but coming on your doorstep...
It's about gratuitous violence, and that's kind of my thing.
I've got some information that kind of runs counter to that.
Then don't say it.
I don't want to brag, Ray, but I'm fucking awesome. I play that to myself every day. It's my alarm clock that wakes me up in the morning.
I'm an American hamster.
We don't know how much of this is accurate. We hit the 50, Ray! Augustus 50!
Woo! Oh my god, 50.
Well, I said we'd never make it, but we finally came true. 50, man.
Wow.
50 hours Augustus. Of Augustus, man.
And he's only 40 years old or something like that.
We only did 60-odd episodes of Julius Caesar.
Right. Yeah.
We're already up to 50 of Augustus.
But weren't some of the, I think, I'm trying to remember, were some of the Julius Caesar shows like really, really long or...
Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah, we did like some two-hour shows.
And yeah, an hour and a half.
Yeah, that's true. It's true.
Something like that.
Yeah.
Still, I'm impressed with us, if no one else is.
We impress ourselves.
I really do in the shower. Where were we?
Augustus is sick. Very, very, very sick. It's 23 BCE. Yeah. There's plagues or something, some contagious disease in Rome. The Tiber has flooded. Grain is down. Food is down. It's chaos in the streets.
Price is up.
And Augustus...
The gods are displeased.
...becomes so sick, they think he's going to die. He's 40.
This is it?
He's 40. Yeah. Now, none of the usual medicine that they give him to deal with this liver condition, whatever it may be, man flu, as we think of it today,
right.
was helping. They were mostly giving him like hot and warm compresses, but these weren't working. That was the state of their advanced medical technology.
Put warm stuff to his body.
Put a heat pack on it. Now, I've been to the doctor in modern times. With a sprain or a swelling or something, he goes, yeah, put a hot pack on it. I'm like, really? That's it. That's it.
2,000 years. This is
21st century, that's all you've got. Put a heat pack on it.
But the heat packs now are fancy.
Did you really go to medical school? Or did you just read a book on Augustus Caesar? Yeah.
Yeah,
everyone thinks he's going to die. So as we talked about in the last episode, the whole idea of what happens next, succession of power, is very, very important.
Yeah, that potential question is now seemingly coming true. What the fuck do we do? And there's not a set plan because we've said this a lot, but Team Caesar is very thorough. They like to think things out. They like to hash it out. They plan far ahead and all that kind of stuff. Good for them. That shows how intelligent they are. But this is something they haven't had a chance, as far as we know, to plan for. There's no just set, okay, let's go to plan F because this is happening. Because you've got Marcellus, who's up and coming, but he's only 19. You've got Agrippa, who can do it all, but he's not noble. What in the hell are you going to do? And Caesar probably can't think straight in the first place. He's probably sick and delirious.
Yeah. And there are murmurings in the Senate that he has left an heir to the throne, bequeathing the state to a successor. Now, of course, I mean, things are very different today than they were back in the good old days of the old Republic.
Right.
When the Jedi ruled things with the Galactic Senate. But...
Right.
Even in this new fangled era, there is no legal basis for one to bequeath the entire republic to a successor.
Yeah, because there's no official office called the princeps. It's all based on him personally, so there's nothing to hand over.
Exactly. Now... An empowered magistrate in their system needs to be replaced by another magistrate after passing through some sort of a constitutional process. There has to be elections. There has to be votes.
Right.
So he can leave an heir, like Julius Caesar named him an heir.
Yeah. Here's my money. Here's my clients. Yeah.
Exactly. But there are no political implications of that. You don't inherit power, as, in fact, Augustus, or Octavian as he was then, didn't. Octavianus didn't inherit any political power per se.
Right.
But right. It's very different now, and everyone knows it's different, but they don't know what it means if he dies. So, Augustus, very, very sick, lying in bed, he summons the senior magistrates and the senators and his key friends to his bedside, and he takes off his signet ring and he says,
"To the strongest."
To the strongest.
And then he dies.
And they go, "No."
He was looking at me when he said that, right? No, he's looking at me. And that's how Civil War starts.
For people who don't listen to our Alexander show, you don't know what we're talking about, and that's your fault.
Right.
And go,
shame on you.
AlexanderTheGreat.life, listen to our Alexander series.
So, but you've got to imagine he calls them together, and you've got to think his message is, unsurprisingly, look, I don't know what's going to happen to me. Obviously, I'm near death's door, but we have to think about Rome. We have to think about not having another civil war. We need everybody to look at the big picture and not suddenly get greedy and callous and selfish. Please help me with this. So I'm going to pass out some stuff right now, but please think of the big picture. Don't ruin everything where we've worked for the last 13 years. But he probably said it in a whisper. Ugh! But now he's got something he's got to impart to various people in the room.
Yeah, look, I think if it's one thing we can say with some certainty is that Augustus and Agrippa actually did give a shit about Rome. We kind of got the sense in the Alexander series that he didn't. Alexander was always like, look, if I die, it's all over. I don't give a fuck what happens next. If I'm dead,
right,
can all go to hell in the handbasket, really. I don't give a shit.
I just want there to be podcasts about me thousands of years from now. Fuck everything else that comes after me.
Yeah, as long as Ray and Cam do the right thing by me, nothing else matters.
I'm good.
If I die, exactly. I'm going to become even more of a god than I probably already am now. So what does it matter?
I'll become more powerful than you can possibly imagine.
Speaking of which, we obviously lost Carrie Fisher a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, my God.
It was recording time. And I'm staring. It's funny. I've got a Star Wars tissue box here that has her photo as Princess Leia on the end with a tissue, which is kind of very handy. I always thought if you're going to rub one out over Carrie, a young Princess Leia, it's good to have a photo built into the tissue box.
Right.
They're thinking. Whoever designed that were thinking, man.
Marketing is brilliant.
You know what would be? Oh. You know what would really save me a lot of time if we just put the photo of her on the tissue box? So my 8-year-old self, or my 12-year-old self, or 10-year-old self when Empire came out.
Or 20s. In your 20s, that's fine.
30s. 12. I was 12. 40s. So anyway, yes. No, he calls them around. And in the end, after he has a chat with them, he gives control of the political side of the state to his consular colleague, Piso. Right. Now, he's not giving it, really. Piso's already a consul.
Yeah.
But he gives the books, the military dispositions and the financial accounts to Piso. Now, I've read a couple of books that said, well, why didn't Piso already have these? He's co-consul. He should already have access to all of that information.
Maybe it was Augustus's month. Remember how they go back and forth? Maybe it was his month. But who knows? I'm just guessing.
Maybe it was his time of the month, yes.
Right. the monthlies.
But so he hands all of that to Piso, but his signet ring he gives to Agrippa.
Ah. Which, to me, was a message, hey, all the armed forces out there, follow my ring and look who it's going to. But that might be reading too much into it, but that's what I took away from that.
Yeah. Now, we know that Alexander gave his signet ring to Perdiccas. Didn't work out very well for Perdiccas. He's given it to Agrippa. Now, again, I mean, Alexander's signet ring was the symbol of his kingship. Augustus doesn't have a kingship, or there's no power in the signet ring anymore other than it's his stamp of authority. Mm-hmm. So he's giving, in a way, sort of the tap on the shoulder to Agrippa formally with the ring. Right. There's a tradition that goes back at least to Alexander, maybe even before that, with the passing of the signet ring to a trusted colleague. But he doesn't give anything to Marcellus. Or Tiberius, for that matter.
Right. Now, I want to go out on a limb and just say that I think the plan is, if he can live long enough, to give it over to Marcellus. But one, he's only 19. He doesn't have the experience. He certainly would not be... I don't think Agrippa would just sit there and roll over and take it. So I think he knows he can't give it to Marcellus. But the point is, Marcellus doesn't give anything, doesn't get anything. And Augustus is going to say later on, look, he's not my heir, and I can prove it to you. But the point is, I think at this point in time, given everything that's going on, I don't think he can give Marcellus anything. And that's the best move, not only for himself, but for Rome. And like you said, I really think they cared about Rome. And I think he is constantly thinking of the Roman Empire.
Yeah. Well, apparently Marcellus isn't very happy about this.
No?
As we'll see later on. Yeah. But there you go. So he's given whatever personal authority he has in whatever way it may or may not be transferable to Agrippa. Now, he's too weak to take any more meetings after this or make any important decisions. A new doctor is brought in, a freedman, Antonius Musa.
Right.
And he goes, so, what have they done? What have they tried so far? Augustus says, hot compresses. Rock. He goes, right. Have you tried the cold compresses? No. Yeah, I think that's what we're going to try. The latest in scientific
cutting edge
technology.
let the compress cool, and then let's try to apply it.
Cold compresses
and cold baths. Yes.
Now, think about it. Not that easy in 23 BCE to get a cold compress. Where do you can heat up water to make a hot compress or a hot bath.
Yeah.
Where do you get a cold compress from, Ray?
In the middle of summer? I don't know. Put something in the Tiber and let it get cold, but that's just me pulling something out of my ass.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess you had to... had to have some way of running around and fetching ice and trying to keep it cold and ice, some primitive form of ice boxes. I don't know. Probably one of our listeners.
Run to the top of a mountain, cut out some ice or snow, put it in something, and fast as you can, go back to Rome and do with it what you're going to before it melts.
You start off cutting out a block the size of like a brick in one of the pyramids of Cheops. By the time you get to Augustus, it's small enough to act as a compress. Yeah.
It can go in your limoncello.
Yeah. So I like this. He's like, what have you tried so far? Hot, right? Let's try cold. What do we got?
Hot hasn't worked.
What have we got to lose?
What have we got to lose? Kind He's going to die anyway.
Suck it and see, trial and error approach to medicine.
And it's not me. It's him. So if he dies, I'm okay.
Luckily for Musa, it actually works.
Yes.
Now, the history say, well, was it the cold or was it just Augustus getting better by himself because he'd been sick for a while? Was it the body just healing itself? We don't know. But either way, he slowly recovers and never gets that seriously ill again. Goes on to live about 35 more years.
And you've got to imagine Musa going, yep. I knew that was the trick the whole time. I wish I'd called me earlier. You put this man through hell. Next time, call me. Here's my card.
He actually walked around singing this.
I've paid my dues
at medical school.
Time after time.
Learn about hot compresses and cold.
I've done my sentence, but committed no crime.
Thank God he lived.
And bad mistakes. I've made a few.
It was that one time I used hot.
I've had my share and kicked in my face, but
Yeah.
We kicked ass on that one. Anyway,
we nailed that shit.
We nailed that bitch. So he gets better, and like you said, we don't know why he's never going to be this sick again. But obviously, they don't know that. They're still going to have to make plans for the future once they get through this current crisis.
And the Senate and Augustus both give Musa a fucking shit ton of money. He is given the right to wear a golden ring. Of course, he was a freedman, normally not allowed to do that. But like, put the gold on. It looks good on you. It brings out the color in your
eyes. Should put a ring on it, bitch. Yeah. But here's my favorite part. One of these days, someone's going to recognize all the contributions that Cam and I have made. And when they ask us what we want, I'm simply going to say, I don't want to ever have to pay taxes again. If you can set that up for me, I'd really, really appreciate it. That's going to be my reward. Thank you.
That's all you want? That's easy. You're easily pleased. I said, that's all you want?
Yeah. Aim low. Aim low. That's, I'm always the only person who's happy all the time is the village idiot. Aim low. That's the secret to happiness.
I agree with that, actually. They also commission a statue of him, and they set it up next to one of Asclepius, the god of healing.
Mentioned, and I want a statue.
We've mentioned him before. One of Apollo's sons, he had a rod with a snake entwined around it. That's where we get the symbol of medicine today. Musa had his own statue set up, had his arm around Asclepius, pointing at him with one finger. It's like, hey, yeah, me and the god of healing, yo.
Woo!
And all the doctors are made permanently exempt from taxation. Which,
hell yeah.
All of them, not just him. All of them. That's
maybe we can
all of the podcasters being made exempt.
We will do that for you one day, we promise.
And he even got a kind of fruit named after him.
Oh, what's that?
You don't know?
No.
The commonly known the Musa Acuminata, not Hakuna Matata, but the Musa Acuminata. Commonly referred to as Cavendish bananas. Most popular kind of bananas in the world. From the genus Musa, named after him.
I did not know that.
There you go. Well,
okay, statue, taxes, and some bananas.
And bananas.
Yeah.
Bananas, by the way, first cultivated in Papua New Guinea.
Oh, cool.
PNG, that's where bananas come from, man.
Nice.
Now, everyone is relieved that Augustus survived because, seriously, what the fuck is going to happen when he dies? But people are wondering about Marcellus. Like, we thought that Marcellus was going to be... He's going to get the fucking nod, and he didn't. And gossip starts to spread. What's Marcellus done that he's been looked over? What's he going to do now? Is there going to be a revolution? Is he going to take up arms against...
Right.
Is
this the beginning
uncle?
Of civil war?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now,
yeah.
Augustus isn't happy about this. He's like, shitheads, I went to all of this trouble to put together a nice, orderly transition of power to my consular colleague, to Agrippa. If I died, I didn't have to do that. I was pretty fucking sick. I don't know if you noticed, I had man flu.
Level 10.
Well, man flu's always level 10, right? That's just 0 to level 10 with man flu. DEFCON 1, man flu, is the only DEFCON you have.
Well, I just wanted to make it clear. He goes, did I mention Marcellus? No.
Yeah. I went to all this trouble, and now you're ruining it by bitching and moaning and creating all of these things. Right. So when he's well enough, he goes to the Senate, and he says, listen, I have no intentions to groom Marcellus to be my successor. I don't even have anything to pass on, honestly. What have I got? I got nothing. You've given me nothing. He's going to get the house. Of course he's going to get the house.
Yeah. But that's
he's
pretty
gonna
much,
get,
yeah.
Well, but he's not even my son. You know, Tiberius is the closest thing I have to a son. I just like Marcellus. He's my sister's kid. Yeah. What can I say? I took a liking to him.
I like the cut of his jib. Yeah. I never mentioned him once, and now you people are driving me crazy. There's only one way to settle this.
Well, he says, no, look, he's going to get some other things. He's creating a band. It's called Marky Marcellus and the Funky Bunch.
was a high school cheerleader. Pom poms and Bobby socks, and no girl was sweeter. Come prom time, everybody was on the line. All the fellas singing nickel and dime. Tales about love and lust and trust. But Annie took it all in stride, cause deep inside, Annie had aspirations. Besides that, she had expectations. Wanted to be a chemical engineer, making 50 to 55,000 a year. Her first year of college was a success, but along comes Billy, possessed and obsessed. He took Annie on a fatal date and showed her things that made heartbeats accelerate. Annie took a hit, breathed two short breaths, one for life, the last for death. Now she's gone, a former valedictorian, ended up becoming a topic for historians. Washed up dreams, shattered pride, all because Annie took a hit on the wild side.
Wonder what Lou Reed thought of that. I never got a chance to ask him. Fuck, there's a long way to get to a joke about Marky Mark and the Wild Side. Yeah, so, yeah, Marcellus, he goes, look, no desires for Marcellus to see. Look, there's nothing even really. But he says, look, if you don't believe me, I'll go and get the will that I've given to the Vestal Virgins. I'll bring it here. Mm-hmm. I've got it. In fact, I went and got it. It's in my hand. Right. I will read it out to you right here, right now.
Roll this shit and read it out.
Yeah. And what did they say, Ray?
They were like, no, we trust you. We love you. We didn't mean to hurt your feelings. We were just scared. Oh, my God. Even your enemies were afraid of when you were sick and you were going to die. No, please don't do that. We trust you. We trust you. Please don't do that. No!
So I read up on this, like, apparently, like, a will was something that was the holiest of holies, because it talked about all of the people that you were going to look after, and, you know, you didn't want them finding out that before time, or you didn't want other people finding out that they were not going to be looked after in your will before time.
Right.
Now, of course,
'cause they might kill you.
About 10 years earlier, he had infamously read out Mark Antony's will in front of everyone. But now they go, nah, it's fine, brah. We believe you. All right. If you say it's true, it's true. Don't worry about it.
Right.
But then something highly unexpected happened, Ray.
He got tired of that shit?
Yeah, he got tired of that shit. he goes, you know what?
Yeah.
I'm tired of this shit. I don't need this. I don't need you questioning me.
Yeah. So on July 1st, he skips town, goes for the Alban Mount, resigns his consulship, and only then tells them that he's not interested in holding that office again for quite some time. The ceremonies were too much, big pain in the ass, waste of time. I could get a lot more stuff done, but I got to go through all these motions. I'm sick and tired of it, and I'm holding this position, you know, that another nobleman could have and wants really bad. I am tired of the circus. I am out of here. Drops the mic and leaves.
Yeah, and this time it's for realsies. Now, he's just, you know, the way I read this, there's a number of things going on there, but he had a close call, man. He nearly died. He saw the white light.
He
thought, shit, I'm only 40. I've done nothing. I've fought some wars. I've been building Rome. I've done nothing for myself. I haven't seen much. I've been to Spain. And I've been to Egypt. Yeah, true.
Yeah.
Been to Egypt.
But not the tourist sites.
Been to Greece a little bit back in my early days. Yeah. So much more I've got to do. Got a wife. She won't fuck me because I'm covered in spots, but I
somebody will.
The amount of money I got, dude. I want to live my life. Don't want to do this console shit anymore. It's boring. I'm bored. And on top of that, it's time to give everyone else more of a go.
Right. And first of all, I want to ask, did you say consulship or console shit?
ship with a P. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. He said that's what he said. This is more console shit than console ship. So much shit.
Here's the big thing. I mean, yeah, so he's 40. He should live a lot more time, a lot longer time, but he's been working his ass off for at least 13 years. He's almost died a couple of times. Maybe he's had an epiphany or whatever. But what it really comes down to is this. He almost died And the entire plan, almost the wheels almost came off. There's already rumors about Marcellus, and now is there going to be tension between Marcellus and Agrippa? He doesn't want it to go this way. Everything he's worked for is about to fall apart, or at least it seems like it could. What it comes down to is that the settlement that he made in 27 BC, where he gets some provinces, he got the army, the Senate gets some provinces, he got the cognomen Augustus given to him, he returned consular elections to Rome. There was a settlement that should have taken care of everything, but now that has to change because he's not interested in being consul anymore because he's tired of everything that goes along with it. It's tying him down. He's got to go through all these motions. He wants to be able to help Rome, but not in that daily capacity as a consul. He's walking away from it all, which is fine, but the problem is he doesn't have that official position. So right now he's just pissed and he wants to leave. But when he calms down, he's going to think, I need to somehow fix this so I can leave, but still maintain all my power. And it has to be official. But I'll worry about that tomorrow. Right now, I'm just getting the hell out of town. And he, in some ways, he almost sneaks out of town just so no loyal senator can stop him. No, please, we can't do anything without you. He gets out of there and then he informs the Senate, I'm done with this. I'm out of here. And now he and the Senate have to figure out what to do next.
Let me tell you a story, Tommy. The first day I became mayor, they sent me down at the desk, big chair, dark wood, lots of beautiful things. I'm thinking, how much better can it get? There's a knock at the door in the corner of the room, and Pete comes walking in carrying this gorgeous sea silver bowl, hand-chased, this big. It's from the unions, he says. So I think it's a present, something to commemorate my first day as mayor. He walks over, puts it on the desk. I look down at it. It's disgusting. I say, what the hell is this? He says, what the hell does it look like? I said, it looks like shit. Well, what do you want me to do with it? He says, eat it. Eat it? Says, yeah, you're the mayor, you gotta eat it. So, okay, it was my first day. Pete knows more than I do, so I go at it. And just when I finish, there's a knock on the door. And in walks Pete carrying another silver bowl. And this one's from the Blacks. This too? And he nods. I start eating. And when I'm finished, there's another knock and another bowl. This one's from the Pollards. Then after that, one from the ministers. And you know what, Tommy? That's what it is. You're sitting eating shit all day long, day after day, year after year. When I realized that, I decided, being a downtown lawyer and seeing my family every night, made for a fine life. Just a fine life.
Do you recognize that?
Love that scene. Yeah. Yes, I love that scene. Yeah.
Tommy Carcetti.
Augustus is tired of eating shit.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. He's just tired of the shit, man. And he's nearly died. He's like, you know what? I don't need this shit anymore. But also, he's got things positioned now where he doesn't need to be consul, as we'll see.
Right, right. And I think it took his near-death experience to appreciate and realize that, look, I don't have to be here day after day. And especially if it's going to drive me to the point where I get sick and almost die, I can still do this just in a different capacity. I just got to think it through.
The other reason he was out of town, as you said, maybe to avoid the senators trying to twist his arm and change his mind. But he was also there celebrating the festival of Feriae Latinae. He was presiding over that. And for some reason, at the end of the festival, he said, you know what? This is as good a time as any. He's probably sitting there thinking about it during the festival, like, really? I don't want to. This festival is boring shit. I don't want to have to do this anymore. He just drops the mic and walks out. Now, the other consul, Piso, presides over a rapid election to replace him with a suffect consul. We don't know much about how many candidates they were, but the guy who won was a guy called Lucius Cestius. Now, he had been Brutus's quaestor and fought for him against Augustus, surrendered after Philippi was pardoned. But unlike Piso, since then, rather than just staying quiet, keeping his mouth shut, He's continued to praise Brutus, kept a shrine to him in his house.
Damn.
So both of the consuls now are former liberators, enemies of Augustus, enemies of Julius Caesar, and they're now the consuls.
Wow. You think if they're going to make a move, now would be the time.
Yeah, but why is Augustus letting this happen? Well, he might not be consul, but he still controls nearly all of the army. And he's got a shit ton of money. He's only halfway through his 10-year command of the military provinces that he's got. So obviously, he just doesn't feel threatened by any of this. Look, I can put my enemies in charge. And that's, I mean, what kind of a symbol is that? That he is so confident in his position and power now that he can even put outspoken enemies of his into the consulship. Like, yeah, whatever. Say whatever the fuck you want. What? You can't touch me. You can't touch this.
And the other part is his auctoritas is so much greater than everyone else's. And again, that's just a word to us, but to them, it was a very real thing.
You can't touch this. You can't touch this.
My music hits me so hard, makes me say, oh my Lord, thank you for blessing me. Try to rhyme and do top, it feels good when you know you're down. Super hip hop boy from the hometown, I'm known as such, and this is the beat you can't touch.
I told you, homeboy, you can't touch this. Yeah, that's how we living and you know. You
can't touch this.
Look in my eyes, man.
Can't touch this.
Can't touch this. Yo, let me bust the phone lyric.
Oh, I wish this was a video show. Seriously, you
we should do that one day.
I was dancing, man. Had my banana pants on and everything.
Yeah, but the point is, I mean, his political clout is such that he can walk away and he is going to be okay. Forget the fact that he has, you know, 90% of the army. No one could touch him at this point, and so he can make this work. No one else would be able to do that.
Yeah. Incredible. So he walks away. Now, the Senate quickly votes him permanent proconsular Imperium.
Mm-hmm.
Permanent. For life.
You cannot resign for this. You cannot resign from having proconsular Imperium. And they're just getting started.
So just as a reminder, that gives him the formal legal right to control provinces and armies for life.
And now that he has Imperium once again, he cannot be taken to court. He cannot, that he would be stupid enough to do it in the first place. But as long as you have Imperium, you are impervious from lawsuits, from being taken to court. So he is politically covered as well. That might not seem like a big deal to us, but it was something very basic to them. And he likes to have all the niceties taken care of.
Well, that's because...
Well, when the president does it, that means that it is not illegal.
And
I love that.
Yeah, and of course, as we've explained earlier on, he also is some of the powers of the Tribune of the Plebs, particularly he is sacrosanct, as is Livia, as is Octavia. So he can't be touched, can't be harmed, can't be tried in courts, and has the right to control armies. And? Doesn't even stop there. The Senate keeps going. So normally, if you had proconsular imperium, if you were a consul, if you were a governor, it lapsed when you crossed the Pomerium and entered Rome.
Right.
Unless, what? When did you get special dispensation, Ray?
For your triumph.
That's right.
Except
for your day of your triumph.
So as soon as you cross the sacred boundary, the Pomerium, you lose whatever imperium you have. You are privatus, and you can be taken to court. You can be sued or whatever. And he's going to be traveling all over the place. They've got to come up with something so he can come back and forth and not have to keep asking for dispensation after dispensation. They've got to come up with a much better plan than that. And I'm sure Team Caesar has been working on this.
He's like, look, I hate to bring this up, but I'm going to be coming and going all the time. I don't want you to have to give me Imperium, take it away, give it to me again when I leave. It's just, can we come up with some kind of solution? They said, well, look, why don't you just keep it? Well, it's okay. Look, you're Augustus. Like, what are you going to do?
Yeah. They're like, the Senate is like, Caesar, let me paint you a picture. You're within the city. You're on the shitter. But we still want you to have the Imperium. So no matter what, we're going to keep it all the time. Come and go as you please, whatever. You will always, always, always have your Imperium. You will never not have your Imperium. How's that sound?
Well, that's good. Look, I appreciate that. I mean, it's good. It's going to make life a lot easier for all of us. Trust me on that. I'll just keep my Imperium. But what if I go? What if I'm traveling? What if I'm on holiday? And I go to a province, let's say Macedonia. It's not one of my provinces, somebody else's province. There's a proconsul there. He has Imperium. I have Imperium. Let's say I ask somebody to pick up a piece of paper, and he says, "No, don't do that." What do we do then?
How about this?
Yeah. What have you got?
Okay, there's a new word. Okay, I mean, you'll know it because you're Roman, I'm Roman, but if anybody's listening thousands of years later in a podcast, here's the word, maius. It means greater. You will have maius imperium. It will be greater than everybody. So no matter where you go, at any time, in whatever personal business, whatever, you will still be, obviously, precepts, but you will always be number one, the first man in Rome. No matter where you go, you will just be a traveling can of awesomeness. That is you. So no matter where you go, you can trump everybody. You won't take over the province that you go to, but you don't have to listen to that governor. You don't have to listen to that person who has proconsular imperium. You will always be the big dog. Does that sound like something you can work with?
So what you're saying is I have super imperium. My imperium is better than everyone else's imperium.
That's right. Your imperium is bigger and better and prettier than everybody else's.
So does that mean I need to command these provinces where I have super imperium?
No. You go into a senatorial province, a province, you do whatever you need to do, but you don't have to take it over. They can still run it. You're just there checking stuff out, but nobody can tell you what to do. And you can do pretty much whatever you want. I hope this works for you because this really sounds like it would work for us. Please don't leave us, Caesar. Please, please.
Well, look, that's great. I really appreciate that. I hadn't thought of that. That's a great idea. I didn't see what was on that note that Agrippa slipped to you, but I think that sounds like it would work. Now, but look, I really hate to bring this up, but there's another issue that I just came to me as you were talking. You know, now that I'm not a consul, I don't actually hold a magistracy. It occurs to me that I have no formal right to summon a meeting of the Senate. Now, you might ask,
why would I need
to summon a meeting of the Senate? You know, just sometimes I might have been away for a while. I come back, I want to catch up with all the old guys. I had an idea. I could go catch up with them individually over wine and olive oil, but wouldn't it be easier if I just call all 600 of them together, or 800, or however many we've got now, I can't remember. Is there some way that maybe I can have the formal right to summon meetings of the Senate when I'm in town?
Okay. All right. You've explained that brilliantly. Okay. Try this on for size. How about we give you the power of being a tribune of the pleb, and here's the beautiful part, without making you a tribune of the pleb, because you can't, because you're a patrician. So you get all the rights, you can convene the Senate, you can veto thing, and I'll even throw in a kicker because I really want you to drive away with this car today. I'm going to give you the right to propose one piece of legislation during every session of Senate. Even the tribunes can't do that. So you have all their power and some, but you will not technically be a tribune of the pleb. Are you ready to sign these papers now?
Oh, I don't know, man. Like, can I go away and sleep on it? Can I think about it? I mean, this is a lot for me to take on.
Well, I'm going to have to say no to that one because the people are freaking panicking right now. They want you in charge, and you're telling me that you're not going to be in charge. We're going to have to tell the people he's still here. He still does stuff and he's still going to look out for you, but he won't technically be in charge. They're going to freak the fuck out because you've been in charge for last 12, 13 years or whatever. I have to take something to them to show them I really need you to sign this piece of paper so I can walk over there and not get stoned to death. I really need you to help me on this one.
Could you go check with your manager maybe and just see if, you know, you can buy me something? Because let me just walk through these one more time to make sure I understand. So what you're saying is,
okay, please,
I don't have to hold any official position. I don't have to be consul, but I don't have to be I don't have to hold any position of authority, but I am going to have
make your own hours
proconsular imperium for life.
Right, no matter where you go,
I'm going to maintain that imperium even when I come back into Rome and cross the Pomerium. I'm going to have not just some of the rights and powers of the tribune, which I already have. The ability to veto bills, the sacrosanct aspects of my nature, but I'm going to have all of the powers and all of the rights of the tribunes without actually being a tribune. I don't have to do the work, but I get all the powers and the rights, and I get the extra one where I'm allowed, don't have to, don't not forced to, but can if I want propose one motion in every Senate meeting, which I can summon. Because it's one of the powers of the tribune. Is that, and I have these powers too for life.
Right.
Is that what you're suggesting? Is that the deal you are offering me today, Ray?
Right. That last part, we call that the bonus package. And I think it's, I think, you know what? Let me talk to my boss. Hold on.
How much
I can
do I need
you
to
all that today? You all sign right, here.
Let's get to the bottom line. What's it going to cost me, Ray? What do I have to pay? Let's get to dollars and cents here, Ray.
Right. Okay. Let me put it in terms you can understand. If you do not do this, there's a decent chance we can either have riots or civil war because the people want you and only you in charge. And even though you won't be there every day, you're going to be working from home in your pajamas. And I get that. Hey, I'd love to be there too, but I'm just a senator. But if I can take something to the people to show them that you are still overall part of the team, guiding the ship, running things, I think I can sell it to them. I just need you to sign here.
But what's it going to cost me? Like, seriously, what am I looking at here? We talking 1,000, 2,000? Do I have to get a loan? Do I have to go see my bank manager?
I'm probably going to pay you.
So it's not going to cost me anything. I don't have to pay anything
for
this.
No, it's not. No. And I'm going to still find way to give you other rewards and stuff in the future. But no, it's not going to cost you bupkis.
You know I'm rich, right? I mean, I can afford to pay.
Right.
It would
be an insult for me to pay you because you've already got so much money. I wouldn't insult you that way. You know what? It's not going to cost you a thing.
Generally speaking, I don't like. Yeah. I like to think things over. I like to go discuss it with my wife. I don't like to make decisions on the spot. You know, make hay slowly. That's my motto. You know that.
Right. That's true. I have the bumper on my car. Why don't you think it over? But I gotta tell you. Please don't take too long. It's a kind of a volatile situation behind me. So if you could, you know, do the quickie version of it like I do at home, I'd really appreciate it.
You shouldn't have interrupted me because what I was going to say is, but you have done such a good job selling me. You're such a good... And I trust you because you're short, you're balding,
desperate.
Chubby, desperate. You know, I mean, I feel like I can trust you. I mean, I trust midgets inherently. Like, you always trust somebody you can pick up and put in a pocket. I don't feel like you're going to lie to me. So, all right, let's do this thing. Let's sign this deal now.
Woo!
Let's make it. Doesn't matter what my wife says. Let's do it now. I think I'm not going to regret this.
Sign here.
All of the power.
Sign.
None of the responsibility. And it's not going to cost me anything. That's what you're saying.
But I know that you're so sincere that you're still going to care for the state. That's what makes this such a beautiful relationship, partnership, agreement in the first place. You're not just anybody. You're not just going to slack off and go, you know, snort cocaine for whatever for the rest of your life. You're actually going to work. You're just not going to drive yourself freaking crazy all the time. So it's a win.
Fresh new kicks and bands. You got it like that. Now you know you want to dance. So move out of your seat and get a fight going.
So historians and scholars are still
debating
what all this meant, why he wanted it, how did it happen, did his plans to resign the consulship begin before or after his illness? Right. We don't know.
No, but hell, it worked out beautifully for him because he got everything he needed, everything he wanted, and Rome the people got what they wanted.
And he will never again, well, only in rare circumstances will he ever hold official magistracy again. For the next 35 years, he has all of the power, but none of the responsibility.
Right, right.
And it's quite an astounding thing in all of human history, the way this comes together. Like, this had never happened before. Even when you're a king, or you're a Persian king, or an empire, or an Alexander, or a general commander, Julius Caesar, you had a life full of responsibilities, decision-making, day-to-day. You had to make decisions on everything. You might have underlings looking right. after stuff, but it all came back to you. If you wanted the power, if you wanted the wealth, you needed to take the responsibility for making all the decisions. Augustus has set it up where he has all of the power, none of the responsibility.
And if you think about it, and the people are eventually, they're not going to like it at first, but they're going to realize that he's still around, he's still taking care of the state. But the people that Augustus needs most, the nobles, the aristocracy, they're happy because now there are two positions open. They can run for those and they can go after them like they used to before this entire craziness got started. And in fact, it's going to work out so well that when they're running for consulship, we're going to go back to seeing bribery. We're going to go back to seeing a little bit of political violence out in the forum, just like things used to be before Gaius Marius, before Caesar, before Sulla, and all that kind of stuff. So it is going to go back to the way it was. These people are going to literally fight for this position. It's going to be an honor once again, like it used to be. So everybody wins. The people are eventually going to figure out he's still around. Augustus gets some time off. He doesn't have to do all the shit jobs. And the nobles get to pursue this thing to ennoble their family. And Caesar Augustus is going to need them because they're the ones who are going to eventually do the day-to-day running of the empire. So he needs them happy so they will meet him halfway in making sure Rome doesn't fall back into all the chaos that he pulled it from.
Yeah. And this is how the Roman Empire was set up. Like, people have asked me in emails and forums and that kind of stuff, like, how did Augustus manage to make the transition from the Republic to the Empire without ending up dead like Julius Caesar? Right. And this is how it happened. Little bit by little bit by little bit, he established baby steps. He established his power, his authority. He cleaned it up. He stabilized it. He made life better. And it really did become a question that even his enemies didn't want to go back to the way things were, even although it did a little bit, as you mentioned, and we'll drill into a little bit. So, as you say, he's giving more senators. Now there's two consulship positions to be held every year, not just one. And right. there are more senators able to hold them because it's not just his inner circle that's as it's been for the last 9 or so years. There hasn't been a Suffolk consul even for the last 10 years until he retired. Most of the men who had held the consulship in the last decade were young. They were his compadres, Agrippa, etc. So there are still the older guys, the Pisos, the Cestiuses, the guys that were around in the days of Julius Caesar and Cicero and Pompey. There's a few of them left. Not many, but there's some left.
Right. Right.
So it's giving them a chance to feel like they are able to build the autoritas of their family's names. Also, they can then go on and become proconsuls, etc., etc.
Right.
And even if they do wish for the return of the old ideal of the res publica, there's nothing much they can do about it. I mean, he has too much power now. It's hard to imagine how anyone can even come close to being a threat to him at this stage.
Yeah. Now, and here's and I don't want to jump too far ahead, but I'm just going to say this real quick. Here's the best example to show how tightly Augustus has got the world of Rome wrapped around his finger. So the next couple of elections, The Comitia Centuriata is literally going to write in his name more than they vote for anybody else. And of course, those have to be ignored because he's not going to be consul. But his name is written in for the next couple of years because the people, and we're not talking about the poor, we're not talking about the unwashed masses, we're talking about the upper classes, they are literally writing in his name because his name means stability. It means peace. It means prosperity. It means your enemies are kept at bay. It means all the wars that are going to happen are going to happen far away and Rome is going to be safe. So here's the rich class literally writing in his name because they want him so bad, even though he has already made it clear, I will not be consul. But that just shows you how far he's come in these 13 years. These people are begging him. They're semi-breaking the rules to try to get him to be consul once again. That is an impressive achievement for this 40-year-old.
Yeah. So there you go. Big, big transition point. Now, yeah. He needs a steady supply of happy senators because he's going to appoint them as legates in his provinces, and also they're going to go off and be proconsuls in the other provinces, except for Egypt, of course. He needs junior legates to command his legions. He needs guys with consular experience to go and do these jobs. And also, when he was one of the consuls and he was away from Rome for a long period of time, it put a lot of pressure on the remaining consul. He had to do the job every month. So there were plenty of practical reasons for him to let others have a go. But just think about it. How many dictators in history, and that's obviously what he is at this point, how many dictators have given up any power?
I can only think of Sulla, but
yeah.
I mean, it's a very small number, obviously.
Yeah, this guy is so clever in the way that he orchestrated this. You really have to sit back and admire his ability to engineer a way forward where he gets everything he needs and yet also gives everyone else most of what they need, enough of what they need to feel like they've got a career, they've got career prospects, they've got the opportunity to build their names and their wealth and all those sorts of things.
Yeah. And you just got to think, I mean, if Pompey had won, either Pompey or Marcus Antonius, I mean, you can't imagine them looking, loving after Rome the way this guy has with his inner circle. This is, to me, the best that could have happened to Rome at this point, because he is constantly thinking, he's thinking of himself, don't get me wrong. I mean, he wants everything that he wants. He wants to keep the power. He just doesn't have to want to show up for work every day. But he is thinking about the city every single day, and they've spent a ton of money and a lot of blood, sweat, and tears to make Rome what it is today. So it could have been a lot worse if someone else had been had the reins of state.
But now they're trying to figure out, well, what do we call him? How do we officially talk about him? I mean, you can call him Imperator, but you can't call him Consul. You can't call him Tribune. You can't call him Dictator.
Not to his face.
Yeah. How up until now, we've been saying in the third year of his consulship, but he's not a consul anymore. How do we even mark the passage of time now? We used to do it in the year of the consuls, Billy and Bobby, but now... So
that's a good question.
Even though he's more than a tribune, that's how it gets handled. His reign from then on is dated from the year he took full tribunal power, but without the responsibility. You know, the idea of the tribune of the plebs still holds a strong attachment for most Romans because it's about guardianship of citizens' rights. And even though he's not really a tribune, it's nice to sort of associate him with. He's the protector. That's basically what he is now. He's the protector of Rome. Yeah. Sitting there.
And he's done
above.
A very good job, so they wanted to keep doing it.
Yeah. And he's just sort of sitting above. Yes, you've got your consuls and your tribunes and everything, but he just sort of sits above it looking down like a benign god, trying to make sure that everyone's happy.
Right. But now that he's got this power and everything's been taken care of, this political crisis, if you will, has been resolved, he still has to figure out a way to try to, because if you think about it, if there's any, the average Roman citizen, if they're paying any attention to this, they've got to figure out pretty quickly, this more than anything demonstrates exactly how powerful he really is. So Team Caesar's got to get together and they're thinking to themselves, how can we possibly make our guy look, you know, a little more humble, a little more down to earth, how we can make him not stand out so much from all the other magistrates. We've got to think of a couple of things to make him appear human again, because we've been building him up so much for the last 13 years.
Well, you know, he had been planning on building some sort of grand approach to his palace on the right. Palatine Hill, as we've talked about before, where the word palace comes from. But they scrapped that idea. He says, you know, now you're just going to walk from the Forum past all of the great aristocratic houses, which are themselves decorated with trophies and symbols of their owners and their ancestors' great achievements. And then at the end, you get to Augustus's house. So he's just the culmination, maybe, right, of many, many, many great men and great families. Not quite as good, but pretty good. Pretty good.
Yeah, yeah.
But of course, no one else had a house quite like his. His house contains within it the Temple of Apollo. And pretty it impressive. Sits next to many of Rome's oldest and most sacred sites, the hut of Romulus and the Lupercal, where Romulus and Remus were found after being suckled by the she-wolf. And right. Of course, they were, when they were found, they were hungry, like a wolf.
You know what we need to do? Well, on one of our recordings, we need to do it, just a part of it, do live split screen on Facebook. That would be pretty funny.
Yeah, Facebook Live. We should do that.
Yeah, cool. And the other thing that you were probably going to mention is that as people are walking around the Forum, they're probably going to see, you know, 1, 2, 17 statues of Augustus, who just happens to be the son of a god.
Barefoot, placid like Jesus.
So from you look this, like Jesus, man.
From this point on, Augustus rarely held any formal magistracy, as I said earlier. His powers are personal. They're not associated with any particular office. They're personal. Right. They're permanent. The Senate and the people have granted him power. No time limits.
The man.
Right. No office from which to resign.
Yeah.
Now, his control over his provinces had a set period, but they were always renewed long before they were due to expire, usually for periods of another 5 or 10 years.
Yeah.
And this whole period, the second resignation and the new titles, are known in the histories as the second Augustan settlement. The first one was when he tried to resign the first time, and they said, please don't go, baby, please don't go. This is the second Augustan settlement.
Yeah.
And
it seems to have worked. Yeah.
He gave his BFF, Agrippa, nearly the same power. Well, the Senate did. So he gets nearly the same power, and he then leaves to govern the eastern provinces. Now, this is where some of this, these rumors, and the gossip mill about a little bit of tension between Livia and Agrippa and Marcellus,
yeah,
Maecenas starts playing.
I'm sorry.
No, go.
I like to end on a negative note. So between 23 and 24, clearly Marcellus is being groomed. Agrippa, as far as I can remember, I think is a couple of years older than Augustus, so it's not like he can succeed him. So even though Augustus was sick, he's better now. He seems to be healthy. So he's grooming this 18-year-old. He's pushing his man to the side. So you've got to wonder, did Agrippa want to go to the east and kind of be his own man in that area? Was Augustus suggesting he should go to the east so he can kind of get rid of him so he can focus on Marcellus? So we don't really know, but there seems to be the beginnings of some kind of political, personal tension. And there's something else we didn't mention, well, I'm sure we'll mention in the next episode, where there's another hit taken to Team Caesar when one of them have a falling out. So the point is, they've been doing well for the last 13 years, but now things are changing. There are younger people coming into it. They're growing up. They're getting into positions of power. And so Team Caesar is starting to morph. It's starting to change. And it might not be a smooth transition. And there might be some hurt feelings involved, and you're talking about some very, very powerful men with big egos, and they have access to a lot of soldiers.
Dio writes that when Augustus recovered from his illness and learned that Marcellus, because of this, was not friendly towards Agrippa, he immediately sent the latter to Syria so that no occasion for scoffing or for skirmishing might arise between them by their being together. And Agrippa straight away set out from the city, but did not reach Syria. Instead, acting with even more than his usual moderation, he sent his lieutenants thither, and he himself tarried in Lesbos. Now, if you had a chance to go and spend time on the lesbian island, Ray, I think you're going to take that up. You're not going to bypass the island of lesbians.
Stop right there.
You're just going to check it out. I mean, you know...
Just gonna watch.
Yeah. Just gonna, you know, like, it's purely for scientific interest. Understand? I don't know how it works. What do they do? Where does it work? I don't know. I gotta go check it out. Now, rumors had surfaced that Agrippa had actually been exiled. There was speculation that he was jealous of the way Augustus was sort of fast tracking Marcellus because he believed he should be the heir. If anything happened, Marcellus was jealous of Agrippa because he got the signet ring.
Right.
but, you know, from what we know about Agrippa, he was the loyal dog, man. Like, I don't see Agrippa trying to make a power grab or being jealous here. But maybe after all these years, he was like, you know, I've given him credit for everything. I built this city on rock and roll, knee deep in the hoopla, man. maybe at some point he did feel like he deserved a little bit of,
yeah,
a little bit of credit.
Well, here's the other part. Even if he's still loyal, what if Caesar was to go to him and say, look, you and I, we're getting older now. I really need to get Marcellus up to speed. Could you do me a favor, a personal favor, and go out east and kind of just keep an eye on stuff and straighten it out so I can reduce some of the maybe tension that's floating around? Because even if you're being mature about it, Marcellus, the 19-year-old, might not be mature about this entire situation, and I need him focused on getting ready to take over for me. So unfortunately, we just will never really know the details.
So just get out of town for a while, Agrippa. Let Marcellus cool down. You go and check out the lesbian acts down in Lesbos. I hear it's crazy. And as you said earlier on, in one of these episodes we've done today, there seemed to be maybe an understanding that if Augustus died soon, Agrippa would take his place. But if Augustus lived another 10, 15, 20 years, Marcellus had an opportunity to mature. And if he'd showed enough political aptitude, he would eventually be groomed to take over.
Right.
But then,
that seemed to be the plan.
In the fall of 23 BCE, Marcellus, age 21, became fatally ill and died.
There goes that plan.
I should cue music, but we've got a review I haven't read.
Oh, please. Cool.
We've got a review from the other poli-sci professor from the USA. This podcast is bigly, he writes, or she writes. Wow. Let me say first of all that this podcast is tremendous. I listen to it bigly. A lot of podcasts just don't win anymore, but Life of Caesar is winning, believe me. You shouldn't listen to it if you're stupid. A lot of stupid people out there. Stupid and weak leaders and people. I've learned a lot about losers like Mark Antony. He's a lot like other losers I know. We've got to be tough on losers, specifically losers and other podcasts that talk about what happened in Vegas. We need to be strong and build a wall around them. Believe me, they're going to lose bigly. Bigly. So thank you, other poli-sci professor. Send us an email at ave@lifeofcaesar.com. We'll send you a thank you gift for taking the time and effort. And that is the end of episode 50. How you doing, buddy?
I'm going to put my pants back on and I'm going back to golf.
Everyone who deserves to be a senator, take one step forward. Not so fast! Stan, Barry, John.
Bugger.
Princeps.
What the f*** is that?
I will explain what it means.
Oh, good.
Yeah, you're welcome. There's still a shit ton of senators here.
Right. As long as we get the names and dates right.
It doesn't matter.